My guest is painter and sculptor Red Grooms. A new book collects reproductions of 50 years of his work, along with critical essays about him. Grooms grew up in Tennessee, but he's best known for his paintings and sculptures of Manhattan. In the mid-70s, he created an installation piece called Ruckus Manhattan that transformed a large Manhattan gallery into a three-dimensional, miniature, comic book-like version of the city. You actually walk through a Red Grooms subway car to get into that city. Groom said, "What I wanted to do was a novelistic portrait of Manhattan from Battery Park to Grant's Tomb. I also felt it had to include the dark sides of life as well as the lighter ones, prostitutes, thieves, and gamblers, tourists, shoppers, babies, moms, and dads. I wanted to get it all in. It got quite busy." Although much of his work depicts Manhattan before September 11th, Grooms continues to paint the city, and the new book includes several of his canvases about New York after the attacks. Red Grooms, welcome to Fresh Air. The first thing I'd like to do is read an excerpt of the essay that Arthur Danto wrote in your new book. And he says, and he's referring to when you started doing your New York work, "The city was still reeling from the upheavals of the 60s, and the air was sour with kind of hopeless desperation. My sense of Ruckus Manhattan was that it ridiculed the decay and made the dirt, disorder, and menace all at once funny. And yet, exactly because what it lowered through comedy was itself so powerful, so full of threat, violent energy, and even terror, it abruptly made it over into something we could live with and even come to cherish. It was an enactment so filled with affection and fun that all at once the city, Manhattan, despite its social disorder, became a place of wonder." That sounds really right to me in terms of the effect that it has on turning Manhattan, which could be a very kind of threatening, oppressive place, into a place of wonder. Does that sound right to you?
Yes, it was actually, Arthur wrote a review after we had finished it in 1976, and it was so encouraging what he said, and actually he defined the moment, I think, as well as it could have been defined.
What were, like in the 60s and 70s, what were your favorite New York places or buildings or neon signs, delicatessens?
Oh, that's good. Well, the big Bond sign on Times Square, you know, that had these, it was a big waterfall, really. I don't even know what Bond's is. I think it was a clothing store that was in the building below,
mm-hmm.
a sort of a men's haberdashery or something. I may be wrong on that. And it had these colossal, kind of an Adam and Eve, and they were nude. And there was this, and a terrific waterfall. And then somehow in the midst of that, I think, was the great cigarette ad, I guess, for Camels, you know, that actually smoked. It would blow out smoke rings.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I thought that was just great.
Mm-hmm. How did you realize that the city could be a great subject for you?
I don't know exactly, but I always was fascinated from childhood with some kind of mythic city that I felt that Nashville wasn't really.
Mm-hmm.
It was too small. And I used to, you know, kind of daydream about it being bigger, having taller buildings and more people. And I don't know, I was a big movie fan. Maybe I got it from the movies or something. You know, big spectacle films. I like books about the Middle Ages. So, you know, the medieval towns. For instance, the wall cities, there's some kind of energy that's confined there, and I like that a lot. You know, that seemed like big time to me.
Now, you've done a few portraits of New York since September 11th. And let me ask you to describe your painting, Heroes on a Shield.
Yes. My wife and I actually are just 10 blocks north of the Trade Towers, and we saw that, you know, we saw the initial hit on the North Tower from our apartment, and it was just overwhelmingly staggering event. So afterwards, you know, during the whole process afterwards, I didn't really know what to do about it. I couldn't really respond visually, but I did think, actually, I was thinking back about the superheroes like Marvel, Captain Marvel, and his shield. And so I thought of the shield as being, you know, protective. And then it was, so that piece really is about the people that were, had taken it on themselves to protect the city and to do the work, the very tough work that was required to get back on our feet. The police and the firefighters, the mayor, and I couldn't, and I never have, I haven't yet done anything and probably never will about the actual event itself.
I'm interested in hearing what your dreams look like or what they looked like when you were younger. And part of what I'd like to know is if you ever dreamed in the kind of cartoon imagery that you came to incorporate in your paintings.
Well, I can tell you that more recently, I've had extraordinary dreams that are very, very, very sinister, like Bosch paintings, you know, of hell, just incredibly sinister things happening.
Would you describe one of the images from one of those Bosch-like dreams?
Well, there's a lot of morphing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of stuff turning into other stuff, and it's like entirely evil and just amazing, you know, and completely surreal. And I just, you know, I have quite a few of those. I don't really know the reason for it.
Were there paintings or images that scared you when you were very young?
Yes, I was very frightened by the Parthenon. In Nashville. Nashville has this famous replica of the Athens Parthenon, and now it has a marvelous sculpture of Athena, but at the time it was totally empty except for these strange Greek sculptures along the wall, and when my parents would take me in there, I just wouldn't go in. I was screamed and ran out because of this big, vast space. I didn't like it at all.
You've suggested that, in your new book, you suggest that it might be that fear of big, empty space that explains all the kind of, you know, cluttered, crowded, jangled imagery in your paintings.
Yes. With the horror vacuum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly why I have that either. I am claustrophobic, I must say, but I don't know why I have that. The busy thing is sometimes it's just because I can't edit or something. So I'm trying to get everything in. And therefore I have to use up all the space right up to every last, you know, little bit of it.
Now, you live part of the year in Manhattan and part of
Yes.
the year in Tennessee, and I think
Correct.
It's rural Tennessee, about 3 hours out of Nashville. And some of your Tennessee paintings are included in the new book. And the style of painting is similar but very different. You know, most, I'd say, of the Tennessee paintings are much kind of calmer, both in the style and in the subject matter. I mean, you have paintings of logs and grass. And
right. That's because, you know what?
Yeah.
I thought I could be a kind of Andy Wythe in Tennessee, like Brandywine, you know?
Yeah.
Then I realized, my gosh, nobody likes Wythe anyway. And, you know, I wasn't really up to his stuff. I can't do that like he can do it, you know? And so, yeah, at first I was really kind of proceeding along those lines, but because I do shows in New York, and I, you know, there's a time limit, and I really have to work on the New York stuff. I work on my New York stuff a lot down in Tennessee.
You do have a Tennessee piece that kind of fits with the New York sensibility that you're famous for, and I'm thinking of the Tennessee Foxtrot Carousel, which is a carousel where instead of horses, you ride on historical figures, ranging from like the Everly Brothers to Andrew Jackson and Davy Crockett. And were you specifically commissioned to do a carousel?
No, it was my concept to do it. Actually, I wanted to make a small sort of a sculpture amusement park. I've always wanted to do that, actually. And I'd had a large show at Grand Central Terminal. This was in 93, and I was kind of excited by the response to that. So I really thought I could start. Actually, my intention was it would be a commercial park.
Oh, like a real commercial.
Yeah, because, you know, I always like, you know, P.T. Barnum is one of my heroes.
So when people pay to get on the carousel, who gets the money?
Well, actually, unfortunately, nobody is right now because they had to disassemble the carousel after this would be its fifth year because it sort of went into debt and needed help. It's run by a nonprofit group. And now there will be a delay right now because it's going to eventually go to the Tennessee State Museum, and they're going to have a special pavilion for it.
Oh, well, too bad. But at least
it'll it'll
be in the
bounce
museum,
back.
So that's great, yeah.
And then
yeah.
Hopefully they'll charge.
But they'll keep the
money,
right?
Hope somebody makes some money. Yeah.
Well, Red Grooms, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Artist Red Grooms, the new book Red Grooms, is a retrospective of his work along with three critical essays.